like to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for listening to this Metatron's Reality Hour.
That's right, and I'm your host, Zach. Today I have the privilege of having Mark Passio as our guest on Metatron's Reality Hour. Today is August 26th, and Mark, he's been at this for a while, but Mark is an independent researcher, public speaker, radio talk show host, conference organizer, and freedom activist from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies. Back in 2007, Mark began presenting this information in the form of a presentation series entitled What on Earth is Happening, which has gained huge following, and with good reason. Mark is a great guy. I had the pleasure of meeting him in April, and just can't say how much fun it was, and really the conference that he's the co-founder and the Free Your Mind conference has just really been the jumping off point for this show, but the What on Earth is Happening show, it's had the intention of bringing the implications of his body of work of knowledge to the greater public awareness. And Mark launched his own website in 2008, which is whatonearthishappening.com. And in 2010, Mark began hosting his own weekly internet radio show called What on Earth is Happening by the same name. And Mark's really been doing a lot of presentations and is a huge influence and huge inspiration to a lot of people, myself included. But he's also over the years worked closely with the activist groups in his area, such as the Tesla Science Foundation, Truth, Freedom, Prosperity, and the Survive and Thrive Philadelphia. Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on with me.
Oh, Zach, it's a pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me.
Of course. So I know there's been some changes as far as your show. I know people were jumping to hear more after the conference. Can you tell us what happened?
Yeah, I felt like I needed a break for a little while. It is going to continue, most likely in the form of a irregular podcast for a while. Perhaps I'll come on to another, freedom-oriented internet radio network at some point in the future. But I just really felt that I needed to take a step back and focus on myself personally for a little while. And so I've been doing that and gaining some new insights and delving into some different areas of study. I will be coming back with new presentation material and, getting ready for Free Your Mind 4, which is going to be coming up in April of 2016.
Yeah, excited about that. It's going to be at the same venue, and I thought they were really cool there, and it was a little bit different setting than I think some people were used to. But when you're getting that many people together, I felt like it worked really well. It was really smooth, and I was really impressed with how everybody handled it.
Sure. I mean, the energy in that room, the consciousness of all of those people brought together who are aware of what's really going on in our world and who want to do something to make it better, was overwhelming. And, that's just what that whole event is really all about. For people who, aren't familiar with it yet, I highly recommend, for them to check out the videos of the former conferences that we've done and to make preparations to be at Free Your Mind 4 on the outskirts of Philadelphia come this April. It's going to be a phenomenal event. A lot of great speakers are already booked, and more will be announced very soon.
Oh, awesome. Yeah, it was the I talked to you when you were on Freeman's show before the conference, and you had mentioned that it's a light bomb, and man, you were right. Even months afterward, just the connections and the friends were made. I hadn't felt that kind of focus and just the energy of people that were just cool, laid back, down to earth people. I'd never really experienced anything quite like it. So for people that are on the fence for this upcoming year, don't hesitate.
Yeah, I mean that's really what a conference of this nature is all about. It's really about bringing people together to forge, you know, connections and relationships, and they can move forward in doing all kinds of different work to enlighten and inform people in the future, just as you're doing, as you know, a result of being inspired as part of that event. So that's what I really enjoyed seeing, how you know, so many people came together in like mind and continued the work that we were putting forward in the conference in the aftermath of it and on into the future.
Well, and the thing I like about it, I don't think anybody had airs of, you know, hey, we've got it all figured out. This is the way it is. You know, it's not about that. And we had some good talks. I didn't intend to, the people I was out with, Chuck and Melina, they had been in talks with Bob, and I had they're like, yeah, we're going meeting Bob over at a friend's house, and then had no idea we'd be over at your place. It's just funny when you answered the door. I was like, oh shit, cool. But
that's great.
It was funny. One of the first things I noticed was a Sri yantra.
Sure. So right on my front door.
Right. And I guess it was probably a couple years ago that symbol just kept on popping up. And I don't know what it is exactly about it, but I'd started drawing them, and it's a pretty intense amount of painstaking detail with a compass and square to do it. And I had quite a few mistakes, but the discipline, I feel like it takes, I don't know, there's something about, if you're not familiar with the symbol, the Sri yantra, it's I think it has roots from India, if I'm not mistaken. Along the same lines with your show, you've been doing it for a long time, and I've always heard you suggest that you start from the beginning, and there's that certain amount of discipline that has for me been really, really helpful and helped me succeed in a lot of areas of my life. And I feel like you know, that's something really lacking with a lot of people. How have you found that discipline has changed your way of approaching things?
You know, I think that's a great question, and it speaks to a lot of what we're missing in society. Oftentimes, I hear people say that they will attempt to give people some of the work that I put forward and try to help them understand what's going on through looking into the work that I've put out. And many people will say, I don't have the time to do that, or, you know, I don't want to listen to even 1 2-hour podcast, let alone 190 of them. You know, this is something that requires dedication. It's not something that you can, you know, receive in an hour of your time. It's something that you have to want badly enough that you incorporate it into your lifestyle in many ways. And, you know, it takes a lot of study. It takes a lot of reading. It takes a lot of listening. It takes a lot of setting your ego to the side for a time and, you know, being able to entertain a thought without accepting or rejecting it, you know, just receiving information. And then you can, you know, put it together, understand how it fits together, understand how it makes sense, you know, sift through it, you know, weed out inconsistencies. I mean, this is the process of true critical thinking, which we don't receive in public schooling or even private schooling.
So with the schooling, that's a big thing. you know, we look back 100 years ago and just the base level consciousness of, your average intelligence person, their understanding of the etymology of words, of Latin, of a variety of different social functions. I feel like we're so dumbed down. It's that lack of discipline, or it's this false sense of freedom almost. You feel like you're free to be as dumb as you want to be.
Yeah, or as truly bizarre in whatever way. You know, it's not real nonconformity. It's, you know, somebody setting themselves up as something that is so-called unique, but really on the inside, they're the same as everybody else because they're just as brainwashed and conditioned as everybody else. You know, it's not true uniqueness. It's just, you know, kind of trying to create some persona, you know, that you fit into to play this part. And, you know, it's kind of takes real nonconformist energy in the wrong direction. You know, it kind of squashes it. And that's what the public school system is there to do. That's what all indoctrination systems are really there to do. I mean, you look at some of, the people being interviewed, let's say by Mark Dice, for instance. You know, he just recently did an interview where he was interviewing people in Southern California, I mean, just to demonstrate the level of ignorance that people are at and the level of being dumbed down that they're at, and asking them if they would be willing to sign a petition to repeal the Bill of Rights. I mean, I just saw this video online recently. It's just unbelievable that people were willing to sign a petition to repeal the Bill of Rights, like either not knowing what it was or literally being that conditioned that they're just okay with that. If a political leader puts an idea forward, they just think that they should get behind it. You know, it's unbelievable. What I was thinking the whole time I was seeing something like this is, how could someone not understand what the Bill of Rights is? How hard would someone have to work to remain that ignorant? You know, it's like so unfathomable to me that it barely computed. I had to like literally sit and try to process that someone could possibly even be that ignorant, that it's that someone is capable of not even understanding a simple concept like what the Bill of Rights is through osmosis, through just hearing about it from other people or hearing about it in culture in general. I mean, it's amazing how hard people are working in our culture today to remain as ignorant as they are. It's like they live in a bubble. They love their bubble. They want it to continue. They're proud of it. They're proud of their ignorance. They actually flaunt their ignorance like a badge of honor, you know. And when you explain to them the body of work such as, you know, what I have put out, is going to help them to come out of that ignorance and really understand what's going on in the world and in their own lives, and help them to come to know themselves better ultimately. Most people don't want that knowledge. They want the total, irresponsibility that they think, that they erroneously believe, can go along with ignorance, because with true knowledge comes responsibility to act in a right way. With true knowledge comes responsibility to try to set the world in the right direction. And that means more work lies ahead once you know. Knowing is not the end, knowing is the beginning. You know, and then you have to actually face the task that would lie ahead of coming out of your ignorance. And that's what people don't want. They think that they can remain ignorant and shun that responsibility that would come with knowledge indefinitely and remain these cosmic children that, you know, don't know and don't want to know, and think that there's no negative consequences for remaining in that state of consciousness. There's, of course, negative consequences for remaining in a state of ignorance like that. And those negative consequences are the destruction of our rights, the destruction of our freedom as a whole people. And not only is it affecting the people who want to remain in that level of ignorance, it's affecting the people who are knowledgeable about the causal factors of the problem, do care about freedom, do care about their rights, and do want the world to improve. And in that connectedness, in that state of inseparability between people and the effects that they, the negative consequences and effects that they are going to receive as a whole in the aggregate sense as a result of the mass of people's general ignorance, the general mass of people's overwhelming ignorance, that ignorance is not a right. See, there's it's something that I feel I should stress more, more intensely and more often in my work. A lot of people are under this erroneous, new agey type religious almost notion that people have the right to think however they want and have the right to ignore whatever they want. And there is no such right. You have a right to think a whole lot of things. You have a right to ignore a whole lot of things. You do not have a right to ignore things that are related with to rights and freedoms, for the very reason that you exist in a reality, in a world, in which your ignorance of those things affect other people's rights and freedoms. We are all connected in that sense. When it comes to the common knowledge of conscience, of the difference, the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong behaviors, meaning knowing what your rights are and knowing what your rights are not, meaning knowing what wrongdoings are, knowing what actions are that harm other beings, okay? And understanding how these dynamics, the dynamics of morality, play into human freedom, okay? Because as morality increases, freedom in the aggregate increases, and as morality in the aggregate wanes, freedom in the aggregate wanes. Understanding that basic law of nature, the natural law that governs human behavior, there is no such right to remain ignorant of the common sense knowledge of the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. That right does not exist. The right to continue to remain ignorant of those natural law dynamics does not exist. Someone is actually committing a wrongdoing against other people and their rights and their freedoms simply by refusing to take that body of knowledge in and saying, I can't be bothered with it, or I do not want the responsibility as a true adult that goes along with the understanding of that information. And this is something that I think goes hand in hand with the whole New Age movement agenda, this New Age religion that says never judge anyone else, never point out anybody else's shortcomings, okay? I'm not saying that we who know this information should in any way whatsoever look at ourselves as perfect. There is no such thing as perfection in the human realm, okay, in the three-dimensional realm at all. But I think people need to exercise better discernment and judgment to say the answer is not about just total passivity and just allowing people to continue to exist in their ignorance. So, you know, the answer isn't to shove information down people's throats either, but we should make them aware that they are doing something that they do not have a right to do in refusing to understand basic common sense knowledge of the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. That right does not exist anywhere, and people erroneously believe it does because they've been fed this New Age religion that, anybody is entitled to think however they want, even if they're advocating bad things, even if they're advocating a state of coercion to continue to exist, a state of slavery to continue to exist, a state of ignorance to continue to exist. You know, these are things that people do not have a right to think and condone. In even thinking that way and condoning behavior such as that, you're committing wrongdoing mentally. You know, because those things project outward and affect people's rights and freedoms negatively, impact their rights and freedoms in the very real world of actions, in the very real world of physical behaviors. So, you know, thinking that it's okay to continue this idea called government, which is based on authority and slavery and violence and coercion, that's not a right. You know, continuing to think that I am allowed to remain ignorant of all these dynamics of natural law and how freedom works in society and not care about real freedom isn't a right. You know, it's something that I think people have a real hard time grasping because they've been so conditioned into this all thoughts are rights. You know, all advocating whatever you want to advocate is a right so long as you don't physically do something harmful to somebody else. There is mental harm. There is such a thing as mental harm in the world. You know, there's spiritual harm in the world, you know, by advocating certain erroneous ideologies and, you know, supporting people who support them. You know, I mean, I would look at it as a wrongdoing, all the support of police and government agencies and military. You know, I think people are committing wrongdoings just by supporting the people who continue to do that kind of violence in the world. And the people who are on the side or allegedly on the side of truth and freedom and the understanding of rights and the understanding of natural law have to take a more hardcore position, in my estimation, when they look at other people's ignorance. They have to start attempting to, I hesitate to use the word control the conversation, the term control the conversation, but it's like people need to not back down. You know, when people say they don't want to know about this, the answer is, well, okay, you don't want to know about it, and so I'll stop talking about it, or we don't need to talk about it. No, wrong. We do need to talk about this stuff. You're wrong. You do need to understand it, because you not understanding it is harmful in and of itself. There are things that you do not have a right to remain ignorant of, and people have to start getting up in people's faces about this information and putting it out there in a forceful way. Not a violent way, but in a way that you're standing forcefully firm in your ground and you're saying, I'm not going to back down and talk about this. And so many more people have to come forward and do that. They have to stop being timid. They have to stop being afraid. They have to stop being afraid, living in the fear of being ostracized. That's what being a truth warrior is about. It's about getting out of that fear of ostracization by your fellow human beings. Okay. And this is why so many people don't want to speak out, why they don't want to come forward, why they remain so hesitant and they sit back on the sidelines and they watch and they take in and they claim to know. But as I've said from the very beginning, to know and not to do is not to know. The people who aren't really putting this information into practice in their lives and spreading it to other people so that the maximum amount of people can gain benefit from the understanding of this information are not actually performing the great work. They are not putting the information out there so that others can take it in. That's what it's really about. It's not about just knowing it yourself. And I see this constantly, especially in the so-called quote-unquote new age communities, the new age circles. Again, this whole concept of the new age movement to me is, I call it the last cul-de-sac before the gold mine, okay? It's the trap that people get reeled into because they believe it's real spirituality just to, you know, be passive and back off and say the world just is how it is. It needs to be accepted the way that it is. No judgment needs to be, you know, placed upon people who don't care about the morality, the real difference between right and wrong. And, you know, this religion, the New Age movement, has done infinitely more damage to the overall understanding of natural law than just about any other aspect of the control system, because the New Age movement is an aspect of the control system. It is something that is put in place by social engineers and by dark occultists to take people off the path of real streetwise spirituality. And people need to understand that and start waking up to that fact and understanding that they've been led down the primrose path, so to speak. Okay, they've been taken off the real spiritual path and they've been led into this place of too much feminine energy, not enough drive, not enough masculine energy, you know, to put this information out there in a way that is unapologetic, in a way that says, yes, there are certain truths that are completely objective and that are eternal and that are, you know, unchangeable, and that it just works this way. And, you know, if you don't understand it, you're doing harm because you're advocating for coercion and you're advocating for slavery and you're just okay with it continuing for all this evil and coercion to continue to exist in the world. And that's not okay and it's not a right. And people need to stop thinking that those things are rights. That level of ignorance is somehow a right that other people have.
So I'd like you to clarify that I really thought it was interesting when you went over the idea of nescience versus ignorance. And I think this goes right hand in hand with what you're saying. But can you define nescience for us?
Yeah, it's a word that a lot of people have never even heard. It comes from the Latin language. If you break it down etymologically, the prefix that you could put in front of a root word, ne in Latin. It, of course, you know, that's where we get the word negative from. It's a negation. It means, you know, the absence of, okay? And, or you know, something not being present whatsoever. It's just not there. And then the word scio, sciere in Latin, the verb sciere, means to know. It's where we get the word science from. So sciere is S-C-I-E-R-E. And then, of course, the word science, the second part of nescience, nay science, is S-C-I-E-N-C-E. Okay, so you are negating knowledge. It's the absence of knowledge, nescience, okay? So it means not to know, not to understand in Latin, okay? But there's a connotation to this form of not knowing. It means that you don't know, but you don't know through no fault of your own. In other words, the knowledge is not present. It is literally absent. It's the absence of knowledge. You don't know because the knowledge is simply not available to you. So you can't be blamed for not knowing. There is no moral culpability for not understanding this information because it was not in your presence. It was not openly available to you in any form. So nescience is kind of like a form of not knowing, of being unaware, that is innocent. The one who is unaware is an innocent party because the knowledge has been actually held back from them in some way, or has been completely absent from their ability to take it in and to process it and absorb it and understand it. So they can't really be held, spiritually accountable, karmically accountable for not knowing it. And there's another form of not knowing called ignorance, which I tend to like to call ignorance, to stress the word ignore. Ignorance is the opposite form of not knowing than nescience. Whereas nescience, an individual cannot be blamed for not knowing the information because it is not available to them and it is not anywhere present in their, sphere of influence, in their world in general. Ignorance, or as I call it, ignorance, the person is 100% completely morally accountable and culpable for not knowing because the information is present in their environment, and yet they willfully choose to ignore that information. They willfully choose not to understand it, not to take it in, not to process it, not to grasp it. So these two forms of not knowing have completely opposite connotations. One, the person is innocent because they don't have access to the information. The other one, they have willfully chosen to ignore or disregard. Hence, it's called ignorance. They've ignored what is present and right before them and available to be taken in. So I always ask people, are we living in a society that is nescient and therefore innocent of not knowing? Or is all the information that could transform the world openly available, out there already, meaning it's de-occulted already, it's unveiled, the apocalypse, meaning the unveiling, okay, the removal of what has been hiding things, the de-occulting of this information has already occurred and happened. That's why I tell people we're living in post-apocalyptic times. The apocalypse of information, the unveiling of hidden knowledge has already occurred. It has already happened long ago, decades ago, if not centuries ago. Okay? We are now living in a society that willfully chooses to completely ignore what is right in front of them and openly available for free at their fingertips. And, you know, people always want to make excuses for people. They always want to say, oh, they're not really, karmically culpable because they just don't know. Well, they don't know for a very good reason. They're openly ignoring truth. They hate truth. People hate the truth. They don't want to hear the truth. The truth, knowing the truth makes you a responsible being, a being that is culpable, that you know now, and so you now have a responsibility to act, the ability to respond to the situation because you've taken in knowledge. That's the reason people want to remain ignorant. They think they're going to escape the moral culpability of having to do something about the situation themselves if they stay an ignorant fool. And you're still not going to escape it because you're ignoring truth, and there are karmic consequences, negative karmic consequences that come with the ignorance of truth. You know, you can ignore reality all you want, but you cannot escape the negative consequences that will come about from the deliberate ignoring of reality, which is where we're at in the world now. And I don't make excuses for people who do this. They are people who are, you know, bringing this avalanche down upon themselves, this avalanche of suffering that is going to hit the world, that has hit the world and is going to hit much harder in the coming years, is being brought on willfully by people's deliberate refusal to accept the truth about morality, about the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior. And, you know, religion has screwed this information up in a huge way as well, because so many religions want to tell you that right and wrong are things that they have absolutely nothing to do with whatsoever. They want to tell you that preferences govern right and wrong, that what I find objectionable to me is what is wrong or immoral. You know, I mean, how many religions, you know, would tell people in the past that smoking is immoral or drinking is immoral? You know, they want to confuse vices that an individual may do to themselves with, which may not be the healthiest practice, okay? They want to confuse that with harming another being, which it has nothing to do with. You know, somebody smoking a cigarette, you could make the argument if there's harmful chemicals by the way that tobacco is grown or in the paper, you know, that tobacco is rolled with, and it's going to harm your lungs, that you're harming yourself. But you're not harming someone else. You're not forcing them to smoke the cigarette. That's coercion and harm to another being, especially if they don't willfully want to smoke that cigarette, particularly if they don't want to take that substance into themselves. So you forcing something like that on them is a harmful act, you know? But, you know, religion wants to try to say that a vice is somehow a crime. They don't want to make the distinction between vices and crimes, things that they see as deplorable or they see as questionable or objectionable to their sensibilities and to their aesthetics. They want to say that's a wrongdoing. No, that has nothing to do with a wrongdoing. You know, another example is homosexuality, okay? I'm heterosexual personally. I find homosexuality objectionable to my sexual preference. Okay, that doesn't mean that I think that it's an immoral behavior. And so many people will, you know, hoot and howl and disagree with that. Okay, I personally don't want to be anywhere around homosexual behavior because I don't find it attractive. Okay, that's my preference. However, if it is mutually consensual between the individuals taking part in that behavior, and there's no coercion involved in the behavior, and all parties are participating voluntarily, then that's a right. That's something that is not a wrongdoing just by nature of someone finding it repulsive. Okay? That, you know, looking at a preference and trying to turn that into a right is not the right way to go about understanding what a right is or what a wrong is. There has to be some form of theft and coercion involved. Theft is the underlying wrong of all wrongdoings, okay? If you're taking someone's life, you know, that's a form of theft. That's called murder. If you're taking their free will to associate with who they want to associate with sexually, that's called rape. That's a form of theft. You're taking somebody's free will through coercion away, okay, by forcing a sexual act upon them against their will. You know, property theft, you're taking a thing that belongs to someone else that they're using for their benefit at a particular time away from them, and you don't have the right to do that. All wrongdoings come down to a form of theft or coercion. Taking someone's rights, a coercion of someone's free will, trying to stop them from performing an action which they do have a right to perform because it's not harmful to other beings. It's not coercive against other beings. You know, trying to take someone's rights, it's a theft that you don't have a right because those rights are not yours to take. They were not granted by you. You don't control them legitimately. And this is what the state is. You know, this is what statism is all about. And, you know, people have to grasp that just sitting back and allowing people to remain in these states of ignorance about this information and about natural law and about the difference between right and wrong is in and of itself doing harm. People sitting back, especially who know this information, not getting involved on the spiritual battlefield and putting this information out there to people, that carries karmic debt with it. That carries karmic consequence with it because you're not doing what your work here is to do. You know, you're sitting back and saying, look at the world, look at the deranged state that the world is in. I know better and I'm not going to speak on it. I mean, that's the worst place that you could possibly be at, you know? I mean, I feel like, you know, almost quote unquote guilty for even taking a break, but I needed a break for my mental sanity. I needed a break to rejuvenate myself. You know, I'm putting my health in better order. I'm trying to get my mental health in better order because just existing around this level of ignorance takes its toll upon you. You know, trying to elevate people's consciousness when they're just a weight that is practically dragging the rest of us down, it doesn't take away our responsibility to continue to try to educate and enlighten and uplift, you know. But sometimes somebody needs to like tag out for a bit and let other people take the reins for a little while. That's why I loved how many people got involved in the great work after Free Your Mind 3. It was like, it was almost like a turning point where clearly people are getting the message of what the great work really is. And that's an encouraging sign, you know? I mean, I see little encouraging signs all the time. You know, they need to be amplified by a million times. You know, they're right now, these efforts are not nearly what it's going to take to move all of humanity in a different and positive direction. But you're seeing the beginnings, the telltale sign of the very beginnings of some of these changes. Like, for example, I'll just give you a little anecdote. The other day, I was walking on the street in South Philadelphia, about a block from my house, and I saw two teenage boys, about 16 years old, maybe 15, and one of them was saying to – they were just sitting on the front step of a home, a row home in South Philadelphia, and one of them was saying to the other, yeah, man, you have to really study what's going on with our money system. You have to understand the Federal Reserve System. They print all of the money and it's all fiat currency and it all comes from out of thin air. They print it up, you know, they inflate it. That makes the purchasing power of the dollar go down. It creates all this debt that can't be paid back. And, you know, we're debt slaves practically as a result of this system. And a 16-year-old boy was trying to explain this to another 16-year-old boy on the streets of South Philadelphia. Now, I've never seen that in my entire life, okay? And that's an encouraging sign, especially when it comes from young people. And, you know, we need a whole lot more of stuff like that. This is why people have to get involved in speaking, because young people will listen. You know, I'm sure that came about as a result of that one boy, you know, watching a documentary or listening to a podcast, and he got it and it stuck with him. And then he's trying to communicate it to someone else, just, you know, one of his buddies on the street. And, you know, things like that encourage me and make me think, you know, things are, you know, we might be turning a corner or the worm is about to turn. But, you know, I mean, there's other instances where I see things like what Dice just did in Southern California, you know, getting people to sign a fake petition to repeal the Bill of Rights. And it's just like, how could anybody possibly remain that ignorant? That's got to be harder work than becoming an aware person. I mean, to me, you have to exert infinitely more effort to try to remain that stupid than just picking things up, just like I said, organically, just through a process of osmosis of just hearing something and retaining it. You know, it's almost unfathomable to me that the brain can be so malleable to be worked into such a condition of absolute sewage. That you can actually not know something that is that fundamental in our history, you know?
Well, and I think this is the type of thing that's going to bubble up, and we can't find ourselves in the trap of leading people to things when they're not ready. There's the quote, you know, when the student is ready, the teacher arrives. And I think there's a lot of truth to that, but the responsibility still lies on us. When we have this knowledge and this information, we can't lay dormant about it. And it's going to seep up and bubble up around it, because Zach 1.0 back in the day, another conference, one of the first conferences I went to was probably 2001, 2002. And it was the Anarchist Book Fair in San Francisco. And at the time, I didn't necessarily believe in an objective truth. And in fact, a lot of where I was coming from had to do with the fact that I didn't have a good understanding of grammar and the semantics. And I thought that there was no morality. And as a result of the culture and coming up, being an angry kid who was unhappy with the state of the world and, you know, to some degree felt like an outsider, you know, coming into this you know, collective of ideas that was new and exciting. At the same time, I didn't, you know, I was very, very much atheist. Didn't believe in an objective truth, and thought that the morality was actually a blockage in freedom. And I think as part of the war against truth and knowledge, you know, we see these, you know, in mainstream punk bands, like anarchy equated with chaos, right? And all these ideas that are very deliberate. But I find, you know, even in a lot of the people there, it was like the Lost Boys. You know, the people were not really looking within, and they were nescient, and they were really children and behaving as children. And, you know, even in, you know, circles where people, you know, have the best intentions, that these really difficult to grasp concepts of, and they're so deceptively simple and elusive, these truths. But the idea that there is a right based on, asking the question, does it do harm to another person?
Right. This is the crux of the whole thing. You know, people don't understand that morality and freedom are absolutely inextricably interwoven and can never be separated from each other. And they'll refuse to grasp that. They will refuse to accept that that is the truth. But it is nonetheless. It's not my opinion. It is a law of nature. It is a science. Understanding that is a science. It is not a belief system or a religion. People always want to try to erroneously claim that, you know, an understanding of natural law is somehow a belief system. You are believing in something. I am believing in absolutely nothing when it comes to an understanding of natural law. That's like saying, do you believe in gravity and the force that is going to, when you release an object in midair, going to pull it down toward the ground, okay? Regardless of what you think that force is or how you believe that it think that it works, it does exist. It's not a matter of believing that when I let go of it, it's going to, you know, fall downward instead of upward, okay? Or hang in midair, okay? There is a truth about that. That there is a natural law in operation in the physical domain about that, just as there are natural laws in the spiritual domain about behavior. When we take it, what will occur in society, what will occur in the realm of manifestation. And this is what you see in our whole society is people refusing to accept that there even is such a thing as objective morality, that there is even such a thing as the difference between right behavior and wrong behavior objectively in nature, because these behaviors take place in nature. You know, they're not constructural ideas. A behavior is done in the physical world. It is part of nature. And the laws that govern behavior are also part of nature, and are bringing the consequences of those physical behaviors to us. So, you know, what you see in society all over the place is this insistence that rights, or the difference between the quote-unquote difference between right and wrong in these people's minds, is only subjective and is only a constructural idea in the mind. I actually just read an article online somewhere where the person is saying the idea of right and wrong exists in the mind, and it's only a matter of people's preferences, or it's only a matter of, you know, the standards that they set themselves, okay? So to them, there could be a completely different set of rights and wrongs in one country as there is in another country. And we actually see this, you know. You could be jailed in certain countries just for playing a form of music that the government has outlawed. And, you know, in another country, oh, it's just fine. In one state in the United States, you could be jailed and thrown in a cage for, you know, putting a certain substance into your own body. And then you go across an imaginary border called a state line. You put the same substance into your body. You do the same exact behavior, and it's just fine. There's no negative consequences for doing it. And people actually think that somehow makes any sense whatsoever. What this is it's called moral relativism. Moral relativism is a concept. It's actually a tenet in the religion known as Satanism. And, you know, that's another thing people don't understand is what Satanism really is. You know, I try to explain to people all the time what real Satanism is, not what Hollywood wants you to believe Satanism is, not what Christianity as a worldwide religion wants you to believe Satanism is, but what it really is. You know, the main dynamics of Satanism are that the service to self mentality comes first. And the second main tenet is moral relativism, the idea that there is no such thing as any sort of an objective standard of right behavior and wrong behavior. You know, that those things are just arbitrarily defined on the whims, the likes, the preferences of the people making up the rules. And nothing could be farther from the truth. Anybody who is a moral relativist is destroying human freedom just by believing in that concept. Moral relativists everywhere. If someone is a moral relativist, they are a destroyer of human freedom, because freedom is going to die the more people do not accept that there is an objective standard of right and wrong that exists independently of human perception. It has absolutely nothing to do with a human being's mind, any construct of the mind whatsoever. The only thing that governs whether something is a right or not a right is, does the action cause harm to another being or does it not cause harm to another being? If it does not cause harm to another being, it is a right. If it does cause harm to another being, it is a wrongdoing. Period. The end for all eternity. And no one will ever change that. It is an impossibility to change that because that is a set of laws that is in effect within creation that man did not put into effect. They are in effect by nature of the creation of the universe. Just like you can't take gravity or electromagnetism out of effect in the universe. It's not possible for any being to do that because we did not create those laws that govern that activity. Nor did we create the laws that govern the consequences of the behaviors that we take as a result of whether we, through our free will, choose right behavior or wrong behavior. And again, this has nothing to do with our likes or preferences. People have to understand that, and they have to get this notion out of their mind that somehow it's all just relative. That's satanic thought. It's satanic thought, and that this is the problem. The problem is, you know, we want to think, oh, it's all the elites. It's all the high-level occultists. It's all, you know, the so-called, you know, rulers of society. The problem is not that we have a tiny portion of people who are controlling all the wealth and controlling, you know, society as a result of controlling that much wealth. The problem is we have an entire population of Satanists that don't know that they are Satanists or even advocating a position of satanic thought. The mass bulk of our society are Satanists and do not know that they are Satanists. That's the whole problem with this society, is that people are thinking according to all the tenets of the satanic religion, have never looked into what Satanism is, don't know anything about it, erroneously believe that it is something that it is not because they've been fed all these stupid notions about what it is, okay, to take them off the path of looking into what it really is for themselves, okay? And they don't understand the danger of this religion. They don't understand the danger of advocating the positions that they advocate. They don't understand how they are the destroyers of their own freedom and everybody else's freedom just by the nature of the positions that they advocate ideologically that are exactly in line with the tenets of the satanic religion. The service to self above all else. What do we have? We have a selfish society. We have a society that doesn't care about truth, that only cares about what they will get out of a relationship with other people. That's it. They don't care about what's real. They don't care about what's true. They don't care about what's good. They don't care about what leads to freedom. Okay? Not concerned with any of those things. They're concerned about, what am I going to get out of this? Okay? And if the short-term comfort or discomfort, if it's going to lead to my short-term comfort and me getting something out of it, then that's good for me. And so that's what's good. Service to self mentality, moral relativism. What's good for me is good. What's bad for me is bad. I can arbitrarily make that up. It has nothing to do with an objective standard of behavior about whether harm results from an action or not. No. It's just all relative, and we can make that up, and then we could set laws into effect that you know, govern people based on our whims, our likes, our preferences, and in another place, we can have completely other set of arbitrarily chosen rules that are the complete opposite of that, and, you know, we'll call that law, you know, which has absolutely nothing to do with natural law, with the laws of morality, and which has and it doesn't make a difference what's actually right or wrong, but, you know, we can set those things arbitrarily because right and wrong is up to our whims. That's moral relativism. This is what all man's law is based upon. And overwhelmingly, I would say, if I had to make an approximation, I would say we're probably at the point where a full 3/4 of our society is moral relativists. I would say 75% of people do not accept that morality is objective and independent of human perception based on whether the action that is performed causes harm or does not cause harm. I would say 75% of our society is in full moral relativism. And there is no better definition of a satanic culture than that, as far as I'm concerned.
Is that, I mean, is do you think this is a fairly recent thing? I mean, we come, out of the, the 1800s, and I don't know that that was the case.
I think even when we had like a more puritanical society, that religion has never stressed true morality ever. It's always been a smokescreen for true morality. All religion wants people to believe is what it finds questionable or objectionable in its aesthetic is what's wrong. And that has nothing to do with true wrong. You know, understanding rights means you understand what a wrongdoing is. You can't define a right in the affirmative. You can only define it in the apophatic or in the negative, because you can only say that a right is an action that does not cause harm to another being. You could, spend an eternity trying to list what rights someone can perform because the action does not cause harm. There's an infinite amount of actions that do not cause harm to other beings, but there's a very limited, rigid set of actions that does cause harm to other beings. Murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, coercion. That's what causes harm to other human beings. And ignorance of what a wrongdoing is, hence ignorance of what a right is. Ignorance of what true morality is also a wrongdoing, you know?
For sure.
Holding back, deliberately holding back knowledge from people. The deliberate occulting of common sense knowledge about conscience, about morality, about the difference between right and wrong is also a wrongdoing. You don't have a right to do that to other people, to deliberately try to hold that knowledge back. These are what wrongdoings are. Everything else is reserved as a right, you know? And people can't grasp this simple concept. Religion has so many things completely off, you know, about what they want to teach people rights are or are not, or what wrongdoings are or are not, because they want everything just to conform to their set of aesthetics and their set of rules and their limitations and their inside the box thinking. They're not interested in what real wrong or right is, you know? I mean, this is why I don't call modern Christians real Christians. You know, they're not anything of the kind. They don't know what real Christianity was ever intended to be about. You know, all they have is a set of guidelines put forward by the church, some of them which may be in harmony with natural law and some of them which may be completely out of harmony with natural law. You know, they're just followers like, you know, all the other order followers of the world. They're just people who don't want to critically think for themselves. They just want to accept this, you know, set of standards that comes down to them from someone else. I'm not asking anybody to accept what I am talking about as natural law. I'm asking you for you to discover it for yourself. It's not something that you need to accept from me. It didn't come from me. I'm not the originator of natural law. It's not an ideology. It's not a belief system. It's a set of actual conditions that exist in nature. It would be like me saying, let me get down on my hands and knees and just implore you and beg you to believe in the force of gravity. You know, please believe me that if I let go of this ball, it will fall toward the ground. Please believe this. You know, I mean, how insane would that sound? You know, I'm not asking anybody to believe in natural law. I'm telling you it exists. You're bound by it. There's nothing you could do about it. The end. You know, if you don't like gravity, well, tough. You know, you're affected by it as long as you're here on the earth. Good luck with not liking it. You cannot like it all you want. You cannot understand it all you want. Walk right off the edge of the building. You're still going to be bound by that force. You know, you cannot understand or like natural law all you want. You're still affected by it and bound by it. The end. There's nothing you could do about it except understand how it works and therefore insulate yourself from the negative consequences when you try to break it. Like if you understand how gravity works, you won't walk off the edges of any tall buildings anytime soon. You know, if you know what's good for you, well, if you know what's good for you, you won't ignore natural law consequences and you won't try to perform actions that are harmful, that are a form of theft, you know, and therefore you won't bring down negative consequences upon yourself, like ignoring gravity. You know, that this is what our society doesn't understand for the very reason that it's in a satanic mindset. It thinks it can have its cake and eat it too. It thinks it can ignore natural law and still have freedom. There's no such thing anywhere in creation. I don't care where you go in the universe, you cannot ignore the common sense, conscience, what conscience is. It means common sense, con science, knowledge together, to know together, common sense knowledge of the difference between right and wrong. You cannot ignore conscience and be free. It's an impossibility in creation. You are bound by the laws that govern the consequences of your behavioral choice, your decision-making processes that go into effect, and then you act upon those decision-making processes, you put that behavior into manifestation, and then you get a result in the realm of manifestation, the physical world. And this happens in the aggregate sense of through a whole population. So as the whole population doesn't understand natural law, thinks satanically, thinks morally relativistically, okay, then you get a condition called slavery in that society, invariably, every time. That's just how it works. You know, it's like saying, well, what's going to happen in a 1G field if I drop this bowling ball and there's someone's foot right underneath it? Well, there's a very predictable set because of the known conditions, the known laws that are in effect. There's a very predictable set of consequences when you're going to do that. Just like there's a very predictable set of consequences for the refusal to acknowledge moral objectivity, for the refusal to acknowledge how natural law functions to bring us the consequences of the behaviors that we choose through our free will. Okay, there's a set of consequences. There's a very predictable set of conditions which will manifest in the real physical world. As morality increases, freedom increases. As morality wanes, slavery increases in that society. And that's the underlying causal factor as to why we are at where we are at in our culture, in our society. All you have to do is look at the outcome and you understand the causal factor. If slavery is the outcome, immorality was the causal factor. The end. That's it. If freedom was the outcome, morality is the causal factor. The people chose moral decision-making. They made moral decision-making processes and then put moral behaviors into the society. In other words, right action that doesn't cause harm to other beings. The society ends up being free. The society chooses immoral actions. It exercises coercion. It exercises violence. The people in that society condone coercion. They condone violence. They condone government. They condone authority. Slavery is the inevitable result. And nothing will ever change until the human mind changes that decision-making process about what it finds acceptable, about what it will support. You know, this is why the propaganda targets women so much, because what they want is women to find people who are involved in the system and in the government and in the monetary system of debt slavery and corporate slavery. They want them to support that whole aesthetic and that whole dynamic, you know, women being conditioned to support order followers. Support people in the armed services, support people in uniform, support people in the police, support people in government. You know, they want this system. They love this system. All the conditioning that goes into the mind control specifically of the female gender in our society. Not that men don't fall into it too, but the social engineers are very, very adept in targeting propaganda toward the female mind, because they know that that's what's going to affect the gene pool. That's what's going to propagate down to the next generation and the next generation after that. So if they control the people who are ultimately controlling who, what characteristics in a society breed or do not breed, which are females who control that dynamic, okay? And they can set a very rigidly, narrowly defined set of aesthetics that they want to put into their mind for what's acceptable as, you know, breeding stock or a mate, okay? You're going to breed entire characteristics out of society, like wanting to rebel against totalitarianism and government and authority, you know? Well, you know, most women want no part of that, you know? Absolutely want to stay away from that as much as possible, because they look at that as, you know, that's danger. You know, that's discomfort. You know, they want to put into everybody's mind, of both sexes. Comfort is what you should be living for. You know, forget hard work, forget real effort, trying to create change, care about truth, care about freedom. What do I need to do that for? I want to take care of my creature comforts. And just think about the word creature, something that's been created. Creature comforts, you know, that's all people are concerned about. That's what Satanism is. Satanism is caring absolutely zero for truth, zero for freedom, zero for improvement of our species, zero for higher forms of consciousness. And all you care about is what you get in the short term for your survival needs. That's it. That's Satanism. And people have to understand that's what Satanism is. Then what is our culture today? Does that not describe the culture in a nutshell, as a whole? I mean, either it does or it doesn't. And I think if anybody says that a me culture does not describe, especially Western culture today, but I would say all over the world, I would call someone who makes that claim an absolute liar. We are in a satanic culture. We are living in a culture of Satanism. And the people who advocate it don't even understand it as Satanism. They think that they're just normal, and this is normal human thought. This is normal human nature. No, it is not. This is 100% social engineering and cultural conditioning by an absolute elite class of psychopathic control freak dark occultists who really all they are is people who have an ancient understanding of human motivations and human psychology. That's all it is. And they're taking all of that knowledge of thousands and thousands and thousands of years of that knowledge being sequestered from the general population, and they're just taking it all in for themselves, and then they're using that understanding of the human psyche and the human motivations as a weapon against the general population who is completely ignorant of those dynamics. They don't even know how they work. And so someone who does know everything about how the human population really works can do a number on that population. They can manipulate them to no end. And that's what we're seeing in society. But again, I don't just blame it on mind control. Does mind control exist? Without a doubt. Absolutely. Soft mind control exists. I covered it for, you know, almost 2 years on my radio show, my podcast. And you need to understand all the methodologies of soft mind control, of mental manipulation. But you know what? That still doesn't excuse people. It does not excuse people from their behavioral choices. That's just influence, you know?
I want to get that into that more, you know, the soft mind control and the controlled opposition. And, you know, I know that you didn't come to these conclusions overnight. And I after the break, I'd like to get into, you know, exactly how, you know, you can come from a position of authority when it comes to Satanism, and you know, kind of go into to Mark 1.0 and what led you, you know, even seeking truth, what kind of led you into Samaria is because of you know, the fact that it's so easy in the culture that we live in to seek the opposite of what is there on the surface. We'll take a short break, and then we'll get into how you used to be a Satanist.
Sure.
Don't panic. The show will continue momentarily. We'll be right back.
when we met in Philly there, I had a lot of fun talking music with you.
Oh, that's one of my favorite bands right there. Great choice.
Hell yeah.
Spirit Caravan, yeah, of course.
Oh yeah. That song was Cosmic Artifact. And the singer Wino, he seems to be on to something, man. His lyrical content, he's probably had his Dark Night of the Soul a couple times. Nope. But
without a doubt,
it's something that I've come to the realization that is almost necessary, and going forward and being able to progress and being able to admit when you're wrong. What was it like growing up in the Passio household?
Well, my family is not really a family of what I would call critical thinkers. They're people who kind of go along with the existing system and, kind of just, think about themselves and what they're going to do, in the very short term, and don't look, down the line, don't look at patterns, just go along to get along. And, they just accepted their indoctrination from, their parents and teachers, and then just pass it down the line. And it's like, it's a program that's running, it's a program that's running in most people's homes and in their environments. And people don't even think about it. They don't even think about how by rote they're living their lives. It's like a wind up doll, literally. And, yeah. Since I received a whole lot of religious dogma, I mean, not like in any kind of a strict way, but, well, this is what we were taught to believe, so now we're teaching it to you. My family and school teachers all, gave me all the religious programming that they were brought up with. I accepted it without much questioning myself when I was young. And,
but I'm sure there was a point where, things just didn't add up.
Yes. And, I would say by my, later grade school years, which is, some people will say, hey, that's a long time. A lot of people started questioning it long before that, but I went to a Catholic high school. I mean, I'm sorry. I went to a Catholic grade school. I went to a Jesuit high school, believe it or not.
Wow.
But, in grade school and my early high school years, I really began to deeply question the, religious indoctrination that had been given to me, the whole dogmatic beliefs of, Catholicism. And unfortunately, then I lacked all the knowledge of, what religion really is and why it exists and, where it came from and, how it's a lot of it's based on astrotheological belief systems and, the cults of the sun and the cults of the stars and the moon, et cetera. The solar cult, stellar cult, lunar cult, didn't understand astrotheology, had none of that knowledge, had no frame of reference to understand religion as a control system to take people off of the real truth about morality and natural law and how they give their twisted form of morality, claim that it's morality. And, it's just again, it's just like a constructural idea that they want to pass on regarding their aesthetics and, their preferences. But because I lacked the knowledge that could have helped me to put all that religious, dogmatic indoctrination into true perspective, my awakening to the fact that religion wasn't what it appeared to be, didn't go in the right direction. Coming out of that indoctrinated mindset just led to a tremendous amount of extreme anger.
Yeah.
And, hatred for it. And, a lot of negative feelings toward family members because they weren't awake enough to see that it was, a control system and, then just blindly taught it to me. So I wanted to find the polar opposite. In other words, there's always this dialectic going on where they have to give people the two opposite sides, Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative, et cetera. Well, they have to put religion and they have to put Satanism out there. These are the two dialectics, religion and atheism, the new age, You know, religion, if you don't like religion, oh, we'll send you into the New Age movement. Let's see what you make of that, you know? Or, you know, Satanism's there waiting in the wings, the dark occult. You know, that's what I gravitated toward because I wanted something that hated religion. I wanted something that was the polar inverse, the total antithesis of religion. And I found it. And it was Satanism. It's a form of dark occultism. There's many other schools of dark occultism, but I tend to think that Satanism is the glue of dark occultism. Regardless of what form of dark occultism someone may be into or practice, almost invariably, universally, they hold satanic ideological beliefs. So you could look at Satanism as the actual religion that holds all dark occultists together and you know, binds them together and provides a similar framework. And that framework is, again, the four tenets of Satanism being service to self above all else, moral relativism, and the two that we didn't really touch on in this podcast, but which I've spent an enormous amount of time on in other podcasts, social Darwinism and eugenics. And now what I would call epi-eugenics, which I've been touching on in my later work and then I will be revisiting. I think I'm leaning toward, I'll give people a little preview. I mean, this is a long way off, but I think at the Free Your Mind 4 conference, I am going to give a presentation on epi-eugenics and the neo-feminism agenda as being derived directly from satanic ideology and how it is turning society into a satanic culture and completely inverting everything and turning everything on its head, which is what ultimately Satanism is about. It's about the inversion of goodness and the inversion of morality. So going back to, you know, the story of, you know, my background, I became involved with Satanism. I became involved with dark occultic belief systems in general. But I really espoused the whole LaVeyan satanic ideology for people who aren't familiar with it. Anton LaVey. And see, I think this is a good topic to get into for the remainder of the show, too, or at least a portion of it.
Yeah.
Because
yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so many people don't really understand the Church of Satan or Anton LaVey. They want to think that this is an isolated group with just these isolated beliefs, and it's not connected with the whole world control system. I'm not trying to tell anyone that the Church of Satan runs the world at all, okay? I don't think that. And nor am I trying to get anybody to believe that. If you're hearing that, you're not listening to what I've actually been saying all along, okay? The satanic ideology as put forward by LaVey, first of all, you have to understand LaVey was commissioned to put the ideology out there to the public. This ideology has been around for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. It's what's been controlling humanity since we've been on this planet. Okay, it's nothing new. LaVey did not write anything new in the Satanic Bible, in the Satanic Rituals, in the Satanic Witch, in the Devil's Notebook, and all the other books that he put out. It's not a new ideology. It's an ancient ideology. It's the old world order. What LaVey did is he crystallized it. He put it all together in a simple, easy to understand set of books and put it out there to the public for public consumption, perhaps for one of the first times in human history. And there's a reason for that. In the beginning of the Age of Information, the old religion, Satanism, dark occultism, however you want to refer to it as, needed a new set of recruits because they don't have enough people in the quote unquote priest class to control the whole population just on their own. The population has grown too big for that recently, in recent human history. They need to hunt out the other potential psychopaths or those with psychopathic tendencies that may not be primary psychopaths, but that were either already or on their way to becoming what is known as a secondary psychopath. Someone who mimics the mindset of a psychopath because of the trauma that they have undergone or the totally poisoned worldview that they have taken on and accepted. This is what the Church of Satan was set up as by the dark occult, the worldwide hierarchy of dark occultism that runs the world. That priest class set up this organization and others. LaVey is a lapdog, was, and until the day of his death, was a lapdog of these higher level dark occultists who commissioned him to put this work out to the public, to put the feelers out to the public, to try to get people in the general public involved in the big cult. That's what LaVey's job was. Okay, so he was doing nothing new. This wasn't his ideology. This is the ideology that has always been out there, that has always been running the world. The ideology of selfishness, of God as the self. You know, the self as God, I should say. The ideology that all we need to be concerned about is our own selves and our own creature comfort. You know? The ideology that the ego is the most important thing and should be put up on a pedestal and practically worshipped as a god. You know? So LaVey put through all this information about what ideological Satanism is, what real Satanism is. And I became attracted to that in my youth when I, you know, got extremely turned off to the indoctrination and lies of religion. As my involvement in Satanism grew, I put out a lot of writings, and I was in bands when I was young, and I incorporated the ideology of Satanism into my lyrics, and I was espousing it when we would play live, you know, at public performances, and I would write articles for fanzines, you know, like independently published magazine, you know, little tiny magazines that would be put out by, you know, fans of music, of certain kinds of music. And I would, you know, advocate for this ideological position of Satanism, which is, again, all about service to self, moral relativism, there not being any objective right or wrong, social Darwinism, meaning the most ruthless should rise to the top and rule society, okay, because their genetics got them there and their will take them further and will keep them there in that position of power. And ultimately, those people then, because they're the masters of the society, should get to wipe out any undesirables. That's called eugenics. They should control who gets to breed and therefore who gets to pass on their genes down to the next generation, pass on their ideas down to the next generation, and who does not, who must die, who must go, you know, the way of the extinct species. This was my ideology. I was a Satanist. I was a moral relativist. I was someone who was a complete egoist, total service to self. I was a social Darwinist, and I was a eugenicist. And the people who I was involved with loved that. They loved it, and they wanted to groom me. They knew I had good communication skills. They knew I had good logic skills. They knew that, you know, while I didn't understand the real truth about natural law, and they weren't going to offer that information, certainly, they knew I could assist them in their agenda. And so and this is what they do. They groom people. They take people into their hierarchy, into their fold. They groom them for further involvement in the cult. If they know that they can use you, they can trust you, that, you know, they know where your mindset is, because the introductory framework for joining an organization like this is an extensive psychological profiling. They ask you all kinds of, a laundry list of intimate questions about your background, how you grew up, your view of your family, your view of life, your worldview in general, what you think of religion, who your idols are, what kind of music you listen to, all your aesthetics, everything. I mean, they get into your mind just in the general application for membership, let alone what, you know, how they vet you afterward when you're actually involved in what they call grottos. So I became involved in some grottos in my area. LaVey himself appointed me the rank of priest within the organization called the Church of Satan, his satanic organization. I didn't seek out a priesthood within his organization. I looked at Satanism as a very individual thing, and I gravitated toward it because I knew it contained ancient psychology. I knew it contained occulted information about how people's mindset works and how the world works. And I wanted to gain a tactical advantage over my fellow human being. I wanted to understand that, knowing that they were in ignorance of it, so I could manipulate and pull fast ones over on people and get what I wanted, okay, in my former state of selfishness, where all I cared about was what I got out of a situation. And LaVey saw my work. I didn't really put my work before them. He saw what I was doing with writing, espousing the ideology, putting it out there through music. My band, I was in a signed band at that time on a not a huge record label, but what was a semi-popular record label at the time for the kind of music that I played. And he recognized my work. And he offered me a priesthood. And this was done through literal writing, like communication, like, you know, in these, you know, zines, how people communicated back then before the internet. I mean, people would just put their address openly available. If you like this person's work or you agree with this article, write to this person here and correspond, and you'd have pen pals. Right. You know, I corresponded with Satanists from all over the world back then. And LaVey got in touch with me. And his organization got in touch with me, appointed me a priest, the rank of priest in this organization, and asked me if I wanted to begin a chapter of the Church of Satan here in Philadelphia. And they call it a grotto, okay? That's what they call their covens. In witchcraft, this is known as a coven. In Satanism, they call it a grotto. And I didn't accept starting a grotto because I looked at Satanism as a very personal thing. Something that, you know, was just about me learning and then applying it in my life regarding others who didn't know what I knew. And that was my motivation for getting involved. And I didn't really want to have group dynamics with it. I wasn't about like leading an organization. Okay. So I never accepted that. I never took him up on his offer for me to head a grotto of the Church of Satan here locally. However, I was put in contact with other grottos in this area. And when I attended them and attended their meetings and their rituals, I began to recognize that this was not an isolated group of individuals working with this occult hidden knowledge about human psychology. It was, and they weren't just working, you know, in an isolated way for their own personal reasons like I was. These grottos were comprised of a totally diverse array of people from every single social institution, every walk of life, politics, education, media, finance, law, law enforcement, military, entertainment, you know, education, you name it. You name the social institution, Satanists were involved in all of those institutions at high-level positions of influence and power in those organizations. They were essentially running society. They had point people in – you name the position of power, judges, you know, media people. Teachers, school teachers, doctors, lawyers, everywhere. And they were not working separately. They were not working just as individuals, trying to get, you know, what they wanted out of their own individual lives in a selfish way. Yeah, they were doing that too, but that's not what these organizations, this hierarchical system of Satanism was about. They were working together. These individuals all over the world working together toward a common goal of them becoming a priest class that would rule over other people as slaves. They were trying to become the total masters of the world, lock down the world in a totalitarian police state way because they use these mules that they call their animals, their pets, their dogs, the police and the military. They're controlling those organizations as well. And their goal was to totally increase their own collective power at the expense of everybody else's freedom. They wanted to make a world where they were the masters and the rest of the population were the slaves. And when I recognized that after years of involvement with these people, when I finally made the connection, this is about human slavery. I still had at least a modicum of conscience that I did not want to stay involved in an endeavor that was attempting to enslave the human population. And so I pulled back my involvement. My conscience would not allow me to go any further, even though I was only really operating at a very low level within this hierarchical system of Satanism. You have to understand that my involvement was very low level. I'm not in any way trying to claim that I was involved at high level position of this occultic hierarchy, because I was not. I was nobody within this system. I was somebody that they were looking at for talents and capabilities and characteristics that they could exploit and use to their advantage. And that's about it. And when I recognized what they were trying to do with those talents and characteristics that they were taking in from the public, from people who bought into this ideology, my conscience said, whoa, you know, I don't want any part of this, because this is about slavery. You know, I'm not interested in being the master over other people. You know, I'm interested in, at that point, I was interested in maybe, you know, fooling other people or manipulating other people so I could get what I wanted out of life, you know, but enslaving people? No, I was never about that. Not from one minute from the beginning. As a eugenicist, I wanted to see certain people gone from the earth. You know, I had my aesthetic of what, you know, a human being should be like, and, you know, wanted certain other kinds of people who I didn't feel were, you know, met my standard, gone. You know, that's eugenics. But, you know, enslaving humanity, no. I mean, and that's what these people are. They're people who look at themselves as the gods of this world, and they're eugenicists who want certain groups of people completely gone from the earth. And they're not even they're not doing it. They're under no illusions that they really even have the ability to do that physically. You know, people rebel when you come at them physically for their gene death. You know, they recognize, hey, we're under attack. They're trying to eliminate our entire, you know, line of people and commit genocide. Let's fight back. Let's, go to war. You know, they don't want to do it overtly. They want to do it covertly. They've shifted from classical eugenics into the realm of epi-eugenics. Eugenics that's waged through a war on consciousness. And they're doing that through the manipulation of specifically the females of our society. Which is, again, neo-feminism as epi-eugenics has to be 100% fleshed out and deeply understood. If you don't understand how that comes out of Satanism, you're missing a gigantic part of the whole awakening process. You know, that comes out of eugenics think tanks, and ultimately dark occultism, this priest class that I'm talking about. So, you know, when I realized how I was being used, you know, my conscience wouldn't allow me to go further within this hierarchy, and I pulled away from my involvement and my affiliations with these groups, because I was not just involved with the Church of Satan. I was involved with other satanic groups and grottos around the country. You know, and people will say, once you're involved in this, there's no getting out. Well, you know who would say that? People who haven't been involved, who don't know how it works. You know, it's like people who say, I know everything there is about the game of baseball, or I know everything that is about the game of football, but I've never played it a day in my life. These people know nothing about how it works. Zero. Because I'm telling you, if they don't think they can use you and you don't have any information on their crimes or where the bodies they've buried lie, you know, so to speak, they don't care what you do. You can go back into the general population of enslavement and rot. For all they're concerned, they're not interested in keeping people in their fold, ladies and gentlemen. I'll tell you that from firsthand experience. When I wanted to leave, they said, there's the door, boy. Don't let it hit you in the ass. And good luck trying to tell people what you think you know. That was their attitude. They don't care because they know people are so dumb that trying to get them to understand this is a virtual impossibility. That's how dumbed down they have the population through all the attacks on them, through eugenics operations, through the poison in food and water and in the air, you know, through the media barrage, you know, through all the soft forms of mind control that they're bombarding people with on a daily basis. And then you add electrochemical and radionic weaponry to all of it. You know, I mean, they have this place on lockdown. If people don't realize we have so far to go, yeah, there are some encouraging signs that a tiny fraction of people are waking up to the truth. But I mean, you look, go walk outside your door, folks, and realize how deep people are still in the consensus mass hypnosis trance. And it's deep. And most of them are showing no signs of coming out of it or wanting to come out of it. They love their bubble. They love their ignorance. They love being treated as cattle. You know, they don't care about freedom because they don't care about themselves, because they've been taught endlessly to be self-loathing. And they have mommy and daddy issues. They have abandonment issues. They want to replace, you know, they want to replace the state as the surrogate family. They want the state to act as the surrogate family, to provide all the nurturing and the care and the protection that they never had as part of their real parenting. Their real mommy and daddy never gave them. You know, that's why there's two political parties always. There's not three. You know, you need a mother and a father. You know, the Democratic Party is the mommy state, the nanny state, and then the Republican Party is the daddy state, the father figure, the protector, the policer of the world. I mean, people can't even see that simple dichotomy, that they're providing a parental, you know, structure in proxy, because that's how screwed up the population is psychologically, that they have parental abandonment issues nested deep down in their subconscious mind that they've never dealt with, operating like a computer program in the subconscious. And because people never work with any of that shadow material, they don't even know about its presence or how it's unconsciously influencing them, influencing their behavior.
It's done in very subtle ways. And there's an interesting paper that was done by the Stanford Research Institute called The Changing Images of Man, which was a think tank and group. And I couldn't believe the things that they were saying needed to happen. Are you familiar with that document?
I'm not familiar with that particular document, no. So, you know, tell me about what they were claiming.
Well, they talked about the importance of, and it was almost discussed with this understanding of, you know, hermetics and the principles of natural law, and that this polarity, you know, in order to be able to shift someone's focus and consciousness one way, you know, that there are different mechanisms of, you know, letting off steam, you know, or, you know, changing people's views by presenting certain symbols and certain, you know, giving people, you know, certain little victories, which we're seeing today, you know, with the,
sure,
you know, the pendulum swinging between, you know, Republicans and Democrats, and people that,
yep,
you know, voted for Obama and now he wasn't the answer. So now, you know, they're going to go the opposite direction.
Yeah. So we'll bring in Hillary Clinton, you know,
right,
and she'll solve all of our woes. That's the answer. You know, it's just a matter of who we're going to vote into office. Has nothing to do with human consciousness. It has nothing to do with knowledge, certainly. You know, we can't be bothered with that stuff. You know, we're just going to now put a female in office and the world's going to just right itself, you know, immediately.
Right. And then we've got here, I feel like there's this new savior within, you know, a lot of the liberal, you know, people who are, you know, right on the cusp of thinking for themselves. And we got Bernie Sanders here who's going to save the day.
Yeah. By making us even more socialist than we already are.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
good luck with that. A lot of people will fall for these dialectics as well. You know, like you said, they'll swing from, you know, they'll go from one pendulum swing to the other because that's how dialectics work. I mean, that's what I fell for in my youth. You know, I thought, well, hey, if religion isn't the answer, Satanism must be. You know, a lot of people think, oh, if religion isn't the answer, atheism must be the answer. You know, people can't understand. I'm not a conservative or a liberal. I'm not a neocon or a neolib. I'm not a Republican or a Democrat. I'm not a religionist or an atheist. I mean, people can't understand how there's more than two dynamics to something. They can't understand that, you know, I could not buy into any organized world religion and simultaneously not be an atheist, you know, that because they have very limited unidimensional thinking in most regards. And they can't see how there's another alternative, that there's, you know, a third or a fourth or a fifth or a sixth or a thousandth way to look at something. You know, that's what putting people's minds into a mental cage is all about. It's limiting their perspective, limiting their worldview, you know, putting the mind in a box, so to speak. And if they never think outside that box, they're not going to entertain any other possibilities other than the limited scope that they're provided by the state or their religion or their indoctrination system called public schooling, et cetera.
Yeah, that really gets people hot and bothered when they can't pin you down and put a label on you, because then they don't know they don't know. It's like a short circuit. Their mind just can't handle it.
Yeah,
because we build these logical fallacies based on, you know, an identity or needing to put a flag or have something to stand behind, because there's this fear that if we don't have one of those dialectics, then there's going to be this chaos, and we're going to be even worse off. You know, at least we're comfortable in our cages, and at least we have this illusion of free thought and
right.
and the ability to, you know, the lie that if you work hard enough, you'll get what you deserve.
You know, and that's so much of what controls society: fear, this fear of chaos. You know, this fear of not conforming to the identities that are crafted for us by other people, you know, stepping outside that, that role, you know, that we've traditionally, you know, filled and allowed to define us, you know, and part of it is ostracization, people's fear of being ostracized. That's why so many people don't want to speak up. I mean, I've had people tell me directly to my face, Mark, you want me to say what I know about what's going on and be like you, where so many people don't want anything to do with you because you speak the truth? I mean, literally have said they know that I'm accurate and they know what the truth is, and all that's holding them back is what other people will think of them if they open their mouth. That is the worst place to be. If someone is listening within the sound of my voice and that is your situation, you are in the worst cosmic karmic place to be in the universe. I'm telling you, I would rather be a dark occultist trying to, you know, eugenically murder the bulk of the human population rather than be that person who knows and says nothing, who knows and remains silent. The karmic consequence you have coming down upon you, I thank the creator of the universe that I am not you, that is not me, and never will be. You know, so I don't even know what to say about something like that. That is so like dark and foreboding of a place to be in consciousness, you know. And you know, part of this is, as you said, this fear of chaos too. It's why so many people flock to the state and think that, you know, this form of violence and slavery somehow isn't chaos. You know, they think violence and slavery is going to solve all this chaos. No, violence and slavery are chaos. The fear of chaos is the problem. You know, chaos is a teacher that teaches us what not to do. You know, fearing chaos is fearing learning lesson through failure and doing the wrong thing and then learning how not to do it. And so then you learn how to do it, how to get it right. You know, Tesla once said, you know, I have not failed in my experimentation here, you know, trying to invent this thing that I'm trying to invent. I just found 1,000 ways of how it does not work.
Right.
So I'm going to be real close to getting to the answer of how it does work soon. You know, if we can't allow for that kind of possibility and trial and error and experimentation and, you know, growth through experimentation, you know, we're totally limiting ourselves and putting ourselves in a cage ourselves. That's what the whole control system is about, the limitation of human free will. And the one of the main ways of doing that is getting people to constantly live their lives in fear. True freedom involves infinite possibility. And that, by definition, means that you have to allow for the possibility of chaos, failure, you know, mistakes, etc. Those possibilities have to be embraced. You have to get outside the fear that you're going to make mistakes. Now, I'm a computer technician, you know, by what I do for Federal Reserve notes from time to time, okay?
Sure.
I'm all self-taught. People say, how did you... People in my personal life, when they watch me fix a computer, they say, how in God's name did you understand how to do this? Did you learn how to do something like this? And I said, largely, you want to know how? I messed up a whole lot of computers in the past. I mean, I screwed up machines when I was young to a point where they were unrecoverable. To get in there and tinker and learn how things worked and, you know, understand how problems got created in these systems and therefore to understand the causal factors of what went wrong with them so I could solve the problems for people. And, you know, that was done largely through trial and error. I didn't go to school for what I do. Not one day. I went to school for something completely different than what I'm involved in doing for Federal Reserve notes now. But, you know, I'll tell you what, I guarantee you I have more firsthand direct experience in the field than most people who come out of, you know, school and just know it from a theoretical point of view. And that will probably carry a lot more weight than, you know, just someone with book knowledge when it comes to this. And, you know, making those mistakes are what led me to that kind of deep knowledge. You have to be open to failure. You have to be open to, hey, chaos happening, making a mistake and it being really screwed up for a time. If you fear that, you fear freedom. That's part of what freedom is. And it's a very, very difficult state to get people to, you know, because they're embedded in that fear. That fear is so deeply ingrained in them from birth. You know, to transcend that fear of chaos, you know, it's that idea that, oh, it won't work out. What really these people are saying when they think this way is, my imagination is gone. It's deadened. You know, I can't envision anything being anything different than how it is now. And that means that change is impossible if you think that way. And see, that's the whole dynamic that has to really be awoken in humanity is the imagination. You know, you have to be able to imagine things changing and being a different way before you can ever actually bring that into the realm of manifested reality. I mean, that's the first hermetic principle. The universe is mental. Everything exists as a mental construct before it's brought into the realm of manifestation. So the imagination has to be present in order to create a different state of existence than the one that we're currently experiencing and going through.
And I feel like there's this huge misunderstanding of natural law versus common law, and people thinking that this type of thinking is dangerous, and that you're espousing anarchy in the sense that you want that type of chaos. What do you say to the recent schism that we're going to figure this all out through a better understanding of the law, man's law?
Oh, it's that movement is completely ridiculous. I mean, I honestly don't even pay it any attention. And, you know, these people think that they're on to the ultimate answer when, you know, all they're really doing is giving credence to a con game. I mean, if somebody's trying to con you and they're playing a con game, a confidence game, would you say, hey, the real answer to solving this problem is figuring out all the machinations of this con game and how this con man put all these things together and, you know, how he manipulated everybody? Would you say that the answer lies into looking at how the con man's mind worked and the whole constructs that he put forward to fool people? You can understand that. Don't get me wrong. It might help you to understand what went on to fool you in the first place. But that's not the ultimate answer in solving the problem. I mean, do you say, oh, I'm going to learn the con man's confidence game enough that he's going to grant me my freedom in some capacity, or I'm going to be granted some kind of special dispensation in the game that he's running. You know, I'm not interested in that. The con man's a fraud. The con man's a criminal. He has no legitimacy in what he's doing. Someone has a right to stop him from what he's doing by whatever means necessary. This is what people don't understand. They think you need to do everything through the existing system, when the existing system is the con. The existing system is the crime. You know, taking part in that is not the answer. Destroying it is the answer. And for people who say, Mark, are you actually for chaos? You know, the answer is yes. I think chaos is what's required. I think the kind of quote unquote order we have is just control. And the answer is watching it crumble, letting it go, not being afraid of what will happen in the aftermath. I don't care how bad society crumbles and collapses. If you know what's going on, you've made preparations to deal with that and mitigate that. You're not going to be totally insulated from it. But I'm not in fear of it. I want this society to collapse completely. I don't care how chaotically it collapses. I don't want this immoral system of slavery to continue one second longer. So I'm not afraid of chaos. You know, anarchy isn't chaos. Anarchy is order. It's real order. The chaos is going to happen because we're so attached to the existing system. We don't want to allow it to crumble and collapse. You know, and therein lies the problem. People's attachment is the problem. You know, I keep explaining to people the fear of chaos is what's preventing us from allowing this system to go. You know, we think we're going to work ourselves into this big corner, not understanding anything about natural law, anything about what's really going on in our society. We think we're going to get away from this unscathed. The laws of nature don't work like that. When you go this deep in immorality, karmic debt is accrued, and it's going to come down, and it's coming for its payment. And this is where we're at, collectively as a culture. I don't have no illusions or delusions that this is going to happen totally by consciousness, totally peacefully, totally orderly. We put ourselves in this uncomfortable position. Expect chaos. Expect suffering. You know, I wish I had a better message for people, but if I told you that I think any differently than that, I'd be lying to you. I'm not trying to put fear into people either. I'm trying to explain how a dynamic of nature works. When you go this deep into illusion, attachment, fear, immorality, expect suffering. You know, that's what's coming.
I think there's one important thing to note, and that's the fact that the majority of people that are not psychopaths, they don't want violence. They don't want pain inflicted on their neighbors and family and brothers and sisters.
That's what I have to fundamentally disagree, unfortunately. I think it's the exact opposite way. I think people love it the way that it is. They love it because of the perceived perk that they get from this immoral system. They want, if people did not want it to be this way, Zach, it wouldn't be this way. If people refused to support this existing system, you know what would happen? People wouldn't show up for work. They wouldn't show up for military jobs. They wouldn't show up for police jobs. They wouldn't show up for government jobs. They wouldn't show up for banking jobs. They wouldn't show up for the lying yellow journalist media that we have in this country. They would refuse to comply. You know why they comply? They love the system. They love it the way it is. And I don't care how many people get angry or upset about me for saying that. It's an impossibility for the manifested result to exist if people aren't willing to go along with this existing immoral system. By definition, it cannot be this way if enough people do not want it this way.
Right. That momentum.
They want it this way in the sense that they're not willing to put up with the discomfort that pulling away and allowing the system to collapse is going to create. So they choose short-term comfort over long-term, you know, well-being. The short-term comfort is going to lead to total enslavement. The short-term discomfort will lead to freedom. But they don't want to go through that discomfort. They don't want to go through the necessary things that have to be changed, the requirements for really truly changing things in accordance with natural law. They don't want to go through that because it creates ostracism against people who are still attached to the system. It creates short-term discomfort in your life that most people don't want to deal with or go through because of how attached they already are to the existing system. So they make a choice willfully, willingly choosing to continue to support and uphold the system, regardless of what it means for long-term enslavement of the human population. And that choice is their karma. You know, I'm not making that choice. A lot of people aren't making that choice. A lot of people have already pulled back. They're involved completely with this society. You know, I'm not telling people to live in the forest. You know, I hate people that say that. I think they're absolutely ridiculous morons that don't understand. You have to engage the population from within it. The answer is not isolation and escapism. You know, going and running off and living all by yourself in the woods. You know, and you see so many people want do this. I would just want to go prepare, create my little survivalist haven, you know, out in the middle of nowhere where I can, you know, live in a natural way off the land, be outside of, you know, the whole structure. That's not the answer. The answer is being in the world, not of it. It's about engaging people right here on the ground where you can actually do the great work. And that means, yeah, you're going to have to participate to the extent that you literally have some survival and some ability to put work out there, but no further than that, you know, and influence people to all in mass step back from this system together and let it fall and let that chaos happen, you know, and not be afraid of it. And if we support each other and have a higher level of consciousness of care for truth and true care for other beings and the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong as we let this existing system collapse, you know, we could put a new one in place based on natural law and it would be sustainable. We might not have to go through tremendous amounts of suffering, but based on where we're at now, you know, I don't see the outcome taking place. I see it being an extraordinarily turbulent, chaotic ride ahead of us. Because we have, as a mass of people, willfully rejected truth in a huge way. And when you do that, you're only going to bring, you know, a horrible cosmic debt down upon yourselves as an entire population. I wish it weren't that way, but I'm just trying to be honest about how I see the dynamic. Do I still think it can be changed? Yes. If I didn't think it could be changed, even at this late hour, I probably wouldn't say a word. But, you know, if people start to look at the work that myself and many other researchers have put forward and understand this whole control system, how immoral it is, stop supporting it, get people to, you know, pull pull back from, you know, support of this system and quit their jobs that are involved in this system of coercion and enslavement, you know, maybe we can turn it around even at this late hour. That's my hope for people. If people want to go further into exploring these dynamics and natural law, my main body of work is, of course, available on my website, whatonearthishappening.com. And I always recommend to people to go to the podcast section, which is the audio section, and listen to the podcast from number one forward in order without skipping around. And when you do it that way at your own pace, you will gain the maximum benefit from the information that I put out there. Of course, there's a lot of videos out there too. I always recommend my natural law seminar videos, the series, as the probably the most important body of work that I've put out. And again, that's all available for free. My website is whatonearthishappening.com. And Zach, I want to thank you for inviting me onto your podcast. And I hope people have, gained some insight and information from this, and will look further into my work and share it with others.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's a huge, huge body of work. And I think it's worth people to have that discipline and, you know, dive in from the beginning. And it's been a pleasure having you on. And I hope to, one day have you on again, but
sure.
We'll kick it out with some hidden hand here, and
great choice.
We until we meet again, Mark. It's been a pleasure.
Zach, thanks so much. You take care.
You too. Fascinated by the crossing, the planets are aligned.
Vertical.